Author and Southerner Faulkner Fox is at work on a novel about a young woman named Mary Fitzhugh Tyler, who feels the guilt of being a white Southerner. In one scene, Mary even tries to convince the wealthy friends of her parents to give money for reparations. Faulkner Fox was a recent fellow at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, and she joins me to talk about her novel in progress, The Legend of Mary Fitzhugh. Faulkner, you're working on a novel now, but it's really your first foray into fiction. Before this, you've written memoir.
And essays and poems, actually.
So the novel you're writing now is about the modern South and people who are grappling with a legacy of slavery. Why is that real to you?
I think it is real to everyone who lives in the South. There are various ways people could deny it or pretend that we've moved on. But slavery is very present in the American landscape. The legacy of slavery is something that people are going to movies about now. So, you know, that William Faulkner quote is accurate, right? The past is never dead. It's not even past. And so all of my characters are haunted in a way by something. I have a African-American character from Beaufort, South Carolina, and what is causing her a lot of trouble is the legacy of the Back to Africa movement in the 1970s.
Do you think Southerners are taught they're Southerners, but Northerners are not taught they're Northerners?
Well, I would certainly say that's the truth about race. I think that white people can see ourselves as unraced, and I think that's really a problem. Whereas if you grow up African-American, you know that you have race. Whereas if you're white, you can think, oh, I'm just neutral, and it's other people that have race.
The novel that you're working on now has a central character, Mary, who was born in Virginia, but now she's going to university in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and is going through a guilt, a reconciliation, you know, trying to understand where she fits and what her role is in a post-slavery country.
She's actually, her name is actually Mary Fitzhugh Tyler, but she goes by Mary Fitzhugh. Just that tradition of naming people double names like that, and one of them being a family name. So my name is Carol Faulkner Fox, but my grandmother would call me Carol Faulkner, you know, as a first name. It's all one thing.
Your experience was actually that you were a Southerner who arrived at Harvard with your two names, Carol Faulkner.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that people were most hung up on is the why would you have a man's name as your first name, because I don't use Carol.
Did you feel out of place?
Yes, it was definitely a culture shock. And, you know, I kept thinking, well, we're all Americans. Like, how could it be so different?
How was it different?
Almost everything was different. I think what people valued was different. You know, I think my family was very, very wary about me going. My father actually tried to talk me out of it. He tried to bribe me, basically, or said, I'll give you a car if you stay in the state, if you go to the University of Virginia.
And don't go to Harvard?
And don't go to Harvard.
What was he afraid of?
Well, my grandmother said everyone north of Baltimore is a communist. They also just, they loved me. And when you send a child to a school far away, wherever it is, the likelihood that they would then return is lessened.
Your first book was not long after that experience, when you, as a young woman, thinking after Harvard you could go anywhere, be anything, do anything, got married and wrote a book about your expectations for what that would be like versus what it turned out to be.
Yeah, I think the cultural expectations on mothers are absolutely impossible. In the 50s, I guess you just sort of had to be a good housekeeper. But now you're supposed to raise perfect children. Of course, you're supposed to have a really powerful, interesting job. I guess your house is not supposed to be condemned, so it has to have some level of cleanliness to it. So I think that the first book was really sort of a critique of what the culture is expecting from women and saying it's not possible.
Well, your book was called Dispatches from a Not-So-Perfect Life, or How I Learned to Love the House, the Man, the Child. And reviewers loved it because it was such a frank, funny look at what your expectations were versus what motherhood and marriage are like.
Well, motherhood and marriage, I ended up quite liking a lot. It's when the culture stepped in that I found it really problematic. There was a park across the street from where we lived, so I spent a lot of time over there. And it's just very frustrating to have these kind of truncated sort of half conversations with other mothers because, of course, everyone is watching their children, making sure they don't fall down a slide. So it's not like you're having an engaged debate. It's not like you're actually fully getting to know these people. So I really missed those earlier days, let's say from college and graduate school, where you could talk for hours with another woman. So being at the park made me feel sad because it made me miss a kind of female connection that was impossible in this setting. But then you would just see people so sort of caught up in whatever concerns they had for their child. So there was a woman who was talking about how she took those Go-Gurts, these little single-serve yogurts, and she had to use a medical syringe to suck the yogurt out and dump it, and then she would use the same syringe to insert unsweetened yogurt back in because she didn't want her child to look any different, but she didn't want him to have that much sugar. And I also didn't want my kids to eat sugar, but I was like, maybe this is going a little far when we have to get the hypodermic needle. And, you know, where was she even getting them? Did she have to go to a medical supply place?
So you've written a lot about these takes on your life. But with the recent project, you've turned to fiction. How is fiction helping you tell the story of a white woman raised in the South, grappling with the guilt and the after effects of centuries of slavery?
I really think that fiction tells the truth. It's just in a different way. And so once I started writing fictionally, things really started to flow. Let me read you this cocktail party scene. Mary Fitzhugh had invited every white person she knew who had a first family of Virginia surname. The Tylers and Fitzhughs, of course, plus any Harrisons, Randolphs, Spencers, Braxtons, Branches, Berkeleys, Blairs, Rolfs, Skipswiths, Allertons, Powells, Gooches, Byrds, Carters, Lees, and Fairfaxes she had ever met. The guest list overflowed with stockbrokers and money managers, corporate lawyers, and business owners. Well, that was the men. The women held positions of power, too. They sat on all kinds of Richmond boards and foundations. The Mary Morton Parsons Foundation, the Lewis Ginter Botanical Garden Board, the Stratford House, where they made huge decisions about Richmond's finest buildings and most meaningful charities. Her parents had been thrilled by Mary Fitzhugh's party idea, thinking she wanted to network for post-graduation jobs with people who were in the very best position to help her. How wonderful that their daughter was focused on work a full year before she finished college, and also that she apparently planned to settle in Richmond. What Mary Fitzhugh wanted to discuss in this lush room with heavy beige drapes, pink striped silk sofas and chairs, a Steinway grand piano, and an enormous oil painting of Stonewall Jackson over the fireplace was reparations, though, not career possibilities. How best to calculate the advantage these descendants of slave owners held today, a leg up directly derived from slave profits? And whom did the people in this fancy room owe money to? Any African-American in Virginia whose ancestors had been slaves? Or only the direct descendants of slaves from the plantations these white families' ancestors had actually owned? The conversation did not go well. You know, I think one of the reasons that I have such a young protagonist, you can get to things that would be different if you had 50-year-old adults kind of discussing in a very, you know, rational, reasonable way what should happen next. And so her youth is a benefit for what I'm trying to get at.
Because they're not going to budge.
No. Well, they surprise me. I mean, at least as it stands now, this chapter ends with her father sort of capitulating because he loves her. He's not getting ready to write a check, but he's willing to drive with her out into the country and see if they can find a place for the biracial family picnic she wants to have. So, and I didn't plan for him to do that. So I think that's another thing that's really cool in fiction is that the characters start to tell you what they want to do and what they should do, and they start doing it. So all of the characters are complex. There are no evil people. Everyone is sort of complex and mixed and flawed, like real people.
Well, Faulkner Fox, this has been fascinating. Thank you for talking with me on With Good Reason.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Faulkner Fox was a fellow at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities and a lecturing fellow in English at Duke. Her upcoming novel is called The Legend of Mary Fitzhugh.